It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for midweek this Wednesday, the 29th day of April, 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And there, gathered together early arrivers at the Horn chat room, you'll find Lou and Squeaky, capably moderated by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Thanks, Steve. Glad to have you this Wednesday. Sparky folds space away from the horn on Wednesday because he understandably does not like religion. And that's okay. But if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, wander on by HeadOn.live. Click on chat room, pick out a screen name and a password if you never have before. And the aforementioned folks, now including Roger in Oregon, will greet you with warm aplomb. That's a silent B in aplomb. But I guess, don't know. There's House of Roberts wandering in. There's Otto DeShot. Yes, we've got a good group started. Brother Deacon Asa letting me know that we're hot on both bullhorns in the empty fellowship hall at the Cathedral of COVID Sense, and that's good. You know, we're still maintaining social distancing in the Cathedral of Common Sense. The little old blue-haired ladies are being socially distant while working in the fellowship hall kitchen and making to-go meals. Oh, they worked up big, massive trays of homemade baked mac and cheese today, and they put their special blend in. There was blue cheese and Wensleydale and Stilton and just an amazing array of different cheeses in with the mac and a little bit of ricotta just to kind of hold it all together. They put it in the pan. They then covered it, of course, with only the finest, sharp, finely shredded cheddar, and baked it. And it went alongside some skillet fried chicken that they put together. There was some Jell-O salad, and they packed them all into environmentally responsible to-go boxes that are entirely compostable, and sent the deacons out doing delivery runs, also socially distant and touchless. Everything was bagged and taped up. And so all you had to do was walk outside. The congregants picked them up off the sidewalks, and had a wonderful fellowship hall meal, even though we can't be fellowshipping here at the moment. And by the way, there was dessert too. Oh yes, there was Mississippi mud pie cake. You know, the fudge and the marshmallows and, whew, oh, it's rich. And those little cups of single-serving portion Bluebell homemade vanilla ice cream. Because that's how the little old blue-haired ladies roll down in the Fellowship Hall kitchen of the Cathedral of Common Sense. Well, there's a visual I never needed to see, Otto. Thanks for that. You may not have ruined dinner in any of the time zones, but you certainly caught mine right amidships. My appetite. A visual for the radio, of course, that dancing about architecture. But it's a take on Miley Cyrus's Sledgehammer video, and it's a naked Donald Trump swinging on a wrecking ball, not sledgehammer, wrecking ball, but the wrecking ball is a great big coronavirus. The coronavirus, is not nearly as disgusting as the idea of ever beholding a naked Donald Trump. Yuck. Ugh. Nope, you're right, House of Roberts. That ain't Miley Cyrus. Not by a long shot. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This one is no different. It is through the listenership, it is through the community, actually the tiny percentage of the community who keep this program going, that this program does, in fact, remain on the air. In the last 24 hours, I want to thank an anonymous friend for catching up with the remainder of Paul from Parts Unknown's challenge and taking us a little further along the way. Thanks going out to Jeremy in Vermont. Thank you very kindly indeed. Thanks to Mona, Joseph. Thanks to Hung Like Jesus. And thanks to Elizabeth. And I can happily announce that we can finish April and have a full day of fundraising free radio tomorrow, which is just freaking awesome. If we can just get 24 folks to kick in 10 bucks or 10 people to kick in 24 bucks, however you're able, and we will have made it through this month, and we'll get started on May. Because this and tomorrow, and May enters on Friday. Mm-hmm. Quick update. Coming from our recently new pal Lou, I told you last evening about what happened with the fire in the building that includes our friend Kevin in Colorado Springs apartment. Lou lets us know Kevin's cat Leo was found. Kevin is currently in a hotel, has a cell phone charger. I've got a phone number for Kevin. I hesitate to give it out. Because we never know when there's some right-wing turd lurking in the offing. And given the stress that Kevin has been under, well, I wouldn't want to run the risk of some maggot jackass trying to further immiserate our dear friend Kevin out in the Springs. But if you'd like to give Kevin a call and just say hi and tell him that he's in your thoughts, email me, and I will share with you the phone number that Lou has shared with me. Lou adds, all things considered, he seems in okay spirits. He wishes he could be hearing the show, but he isn't. That just doesn't happen without a computer. That's true, because you know, this is not over the air commercial radio. All that bandwidth is taken up by Jesus Radio and more Jesus Radio, and some the part that's not Jesus Radio is mostly country stations and utterly unlistenable pop. Ralph's writing saying, "I hope Kevin gets better soon. Huge hugs." Thank you, Ralph's. Perhaps he can catch up on podcasts at some point in time and hear your kind wishes. Well, I did ruin dinner after all. How about me? Lee in New York says, you couldn't get 10 minutes into the broadcast without ruining dinner. Wrecking ball to dinner everywhere. Ah, wrecking ball to dinner. Okay, yeah. Well, at least the Eastern time zone. Maybe we ruined late brunch in the Pacific time zone. That's something that needs to be taken into account with the timing of the program now. You know, 2 to 5 in the Pacific. 2 o'clock's late brunch. If I get an early start, I can fuck up lunch and dinner in the Pacific time zone. And that's not easy. So this evening, any number of opportunities for directions in which to go. Because even though there's no one in the pews, I am still Archpope, Uber, Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized, Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Munificent Mullah, Gonzo Guru, Bob Kincaid, and we have lots of religious weirdness that we can tap into because, of course, I think it's fairly clear this far into the shutdown that probably the single largest vector for this disease is religion. And in particular, fundamentalist religion. Note I'm saying religion, not Christianity, because we can't hang this entirely on Christianity. No, not after, okay, Billable, we're off and running. Billable Rick says, stop telling us how to ruin brunch, Bob. Well, I won't tell you, then I'll just go ahead and ruin it without permission. Yeah. No, after what happened in, and thank you to Dan. Dan says, please pass on my best wishes to Kevin. I suspect he may be preoccupied with reestablishing his home. We're glad he and Leo are okay. Thank you, Dan. Further proof of the essential fundamental kindness and decency of this community, one toward the other. Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Holy shit. What a monumental fuck-up. So this Hasidic rabbi, at some point in the recent past, went to his long home. And this, in turn, prompted the Hasidic, some portion of the Hasidic community in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, to decide that they were going to hold a socially distant, huge street gathering funeral for Rabbi Chaim Meretz. Now, there is no irony at all in the fact that in the fact that Rabbi Chaim Meretz was killed by the Rona. He got the Rona, and he got dead. And I'm sad for him and his community. He was apparently greatly beloved among that group of fundamentalists. And so out to the streets they took in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And now, as a result, the Rona will probably re-spike in New York City, which New York City needed probably less than an Abrams tank needs a kickstand. Oh, it was bad. It was bad. These fundies got out, wallering and larping and smollicking all over each other and rubbing up and shoulders and and so now, where before it was Rabbi Chaim Meretz who got knocked off by the Rona, now their religious fervor will spread more deeply into their own community and probably outside of their community, because the NYPD had to come in. and disperse this gang of, sorry, idiots. Fucking idiots. I guess they thought that their great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky would protect them, but that seems kind of counterintuitive, seeing as how the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky hadn't protected Rabbi Chaim Meretz. Ugh! Ugh! I mean, I can't fathom this stupid bullshit. My heart bleeds. I'm infuriated when I see stories of, you know, Trump supporters and maggots and Nazis spray painting synagogues and spray painting swastikas and such like on Jewish houses of worship. It galls me. It gags my gut to see such hate for no good damn reason. And then you've got this community of Hasidim in Brooklyn who go out as if to say, oh, go ahead. Hate us some more. And just as non-Christians can't fix what's wrong with fundamentalist Christianity, non-Jews can't fix what's wrong with fundamentalist Judaism. And there's a lot wrong with it. Williamsburg, Brooklyn, being a classic case in point. And this isn't, of course, this isn't the first one. Lakewood, New Jersey, they practically rioted and wouldn't disperse. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, who has been an absolutely tireless advocate for these communities, who has done more outreach probably than any mayor in recent memory, was fit to pull his hair out. He said, this is absolutely unacceptable. And that's right. And of course, this just adds more fuel to the fire. I got a story sitting here from maybe yesterday or so. In which the Attorney General of Utah has had to suspend a massive, humongous surveillance system. The system is called Banjo, and it's based in Park City, Utah. And Banjo was this, like I said, it's a humongous surveillance system. For monitoring 911 calls, monitoring social media, monitoring traffic cameras. And the company that did it got $750,000 to provide the system, and then a $20.7 million contract with the state. This all of record in the Salt Lake Tribune yesterday. Well, now the Republican Attorney General of that Republican state and that Republican government has suspended the surveillance system. Why? Because it turns out that Banjo was launched in large part by a guy named Damian Patton. And Damian Patton, it turns out, back when he was 17 years old, became a member of the, wait for it, of course, because it's always like this, the Dixie Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. And 17-year-old Damian Patton, alongside the leader of that group, I guess that would be a noble lumpkin or a grand cyclops or a one-nut wizard. I don't know. But he joined the leader of the Dixie Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, Damian Patton did, and went along on in a suburb of Nashville, Tennessee, and helped to shoot up a synagogue. Because he was involved in a federal hate crime prosecution. And so, Attorney General Reyes moved to shut down this surveillance system that was developed by a Klansman. Because of all the tech companies out there, the state of Utah couldn't find one that wasn't run by a Klansman. Attorney General Reyes is kind of new-ish in the job because he's replaced another Republican who left the Utah Attorney General's office under an allegation of scandalous behavior. His name, because the goddess of irony never sleeps, was John Swallow. And so while you've got, you know, it's bad enough that there are people out there who hate Jews for just being Jews, and God knows the language of that hellish regime of the mid-20th century, it used words like vermin to describe Jewish people and used their hate to murder them in their millions, along comes a bunch of ultra-Orthodox assholes who can't just let a guy go get buried without going into the streets and spreading disease. Damnation. Well, I didn't think about it that way, but Lee in New York has got this one. Subject line, Chaim Mertz. The goddess of irony is at work here, Bob. Chaim means life. Well, yeah, I mean, Chaim. Yeah, to life. Chaim means life. I'm sure you know the toast to life. Chaim, yes. Yes, I do. And, of course, Mertz. And immediately I think of poor Fred Mertz from the I Love Lucy show. That's an ironic combination that could probably, under the proper circumstances, fuel nuclear fusion. And along the way, Mayor de Blasio, as Ron in the far, I don't know, is it unfrozen yet? North, Ron says, and then Bill de Blasio stepped on his dick, making the situation even worse. Yeah, he did, because he kind of made it seem like all the Jews were responsible. When even... You don't have to look very far among American Jewry to find people who say, "Oh no, those Hasidim, Those fuckers are nuts. And so in reality, even, you know, no, Christianity can't fix fundamentalist Christianity, and normal Jewry can't fix the Hasidim. They are just embedded, baked in, unsolvable flaws. The same as it is with the various fundamentalisms of Islam or any other faith system. It's that faith part that, you know, really causes all the trouble, because you're running around believing in things instead of knowing them. But like I said, fundamentalist religion, not fundamentalist any particular religion, because it turns out that, how about that, the evangelicals in America, who said that, the Rona ain't real, and remember the woman who came away from wallering all over her fellow congregants in, I think it was Ohio, maybe, and said, "I'm washed in the blood of Jesus." A journalist by the name of Alex Woodward, who writes for The Independent in the UK, did some real live, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding journalism, and reported that more than 30 preachers in what we laughingly refer to as the Bible Belt have been felled by the Rona. And sadly, many of these are coming from the African-American community. Alex Woodward writes, "As many as 30 church leaders from the nation's largest African-American Pentecostal denomination have now been confirmed to have died in the outbreak as members defied public health warnings to avoid large gatherings to prevent transmitting the virus. Deaths across the U.S. in areas where the Church of God in Christ has a presence have reportedly stemmed from funerals and other meetings among clergy and other church staff held during the pandemic." God almighty. How do you get through to people like this? People who think, because this is what makes believing. This is what makes being part of what the late, great Carl Sagan referred to as the demon-haunted world so horribly dangerous. Alex Woodward continues and says, "The tragedy among one of the largest black Pentecostal groups follows a message of defiance from many American churches, particularly conservative Christian groups, to ignore state and local government mandates against group gatherings, with police increasingly called in to enforce the bans and hold preachers accountable. The virus has had a wildly disproportionate impact among black congregations, many of which have relied on group worship. Yet despite the climbing death toll, many U.S. church leaders throughout the Bible Belt have not only continued to hold services, but have urged worshipers to continue paying tithes, including recent stimulus checks to support their mission." Alex Woodward cites Bishop Gerald Glenn, Bishop Gerald Glenn, founder and leader since 1995 of the New Deliverance Evangelistic Church in Chesterfield, Virginia, was the first black chaplain of the town's police, and he said he was going to keep preaching unless I'm in jail or the hospital. And then he wound up in the funeral home because the Rona got him. Among other things, he said, God is larger than this dreaded virus. And then God proved he wasn't, because the virus got the bishop, and the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky was powerless to help him.
May he rest in peace.
May he rest in peace. Yes, 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 my Viking warrior, Pharaoh princess, may he rest in peace. Peace, peace. It was March 15th when Bishop Glenn said, I'm glad to be in the Lord's house. It didn't have to be this way. The government could have said we couldn't gather at all. Just imagine if the government had the authority to say, you and me, we can't go to church. Aren't you glad you were free to get up and come? And all God's children hollered, Amen! And then the bishop got all dead. And they're still showing up. Pastor Tony Spellcaster, down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Stan. Well, he showed up in defiance of a court order last week and preached. And in the video, you can actually see his home confinement ankle monitor. But Jeebus wants him in the pulpit. And he was the one who started the call for everybody to send their stimulus checks to him. And he said he was going to give it out to other missionaries and preachers who weren't eligible for payroll protection and things like that, even though, well, they were. Then there was the funeral in Chicago that turned into a super spreader event that helped light the fire of coronavirus in Chicago. Yeah. Yeah, one individual who went to the funeral got sick 2 days after being there, and was stuck in the hospital a week later, then was put on a ventilator, and as is the case in about 80% of the occasions when you're put on a ventilator, went home to live with Jesus. Then there's Rodney Howard Brown. We've talked about him. It took the action of the governor of the state of Florida to override the public health efforts of Hillsborough County, Florida, and save Rodney Howard Brown, who, by the way, you know, it wasn't born here, and by virtue of being a lawbreaker, under the theories at least espoused for other people by the maggot regime, should be liable to have the ICE folks knock down his goddamn door, take him into custody, and ship him back to fucking South Africa, where he goddamned well belongs.
He has green, baby.
He has green and he has white, baby. And the Second Amendment goobers are out running around. The National Ruble Association says that the Rona is a reason for the government to want your guns. Never mind the fact that guns have continued to fly off the shelves. Ammunition is damned hard to come by because the maggots keep buying it all. Well, no, you know, I would have done is What it done is I laid in a supply of 20,000 rounds of ammunition in case I got to go hunting to put food on my family. Yeah. And by the way, Pastor Tony Spellcaster was actually charged with aggravated assault after he tried to run over a protester with his church bus. In the name of Jesus! Well, I mean, if you want to get into the deep history of Christianity, you probably don't. It's worth remembering that way back under one of the Roman emperors, the emperor, who by that time had attained similar godlike status to that of Pharaoh of old, well, a law was passed that said that everybody had to wander by a portrait of the emperor, swear allegiance to the emperor, and say nice things about him, like, you know, hope you don't die anytime soon, your emperorness. Well, the Christians couldn't do that. And they eagerly didn't do it. And they eagerly defied the law, which kind of put the emperor, who was kind of into maintaining public order, into the unenviable position of, I mean, they didn't have prisons, so they became entertainment. And that, and thus do we get the legend down through the years. It was not done with nearly the frequency that the church used it for publicity to suggest they did, of letting Christians go and play with lions, leopards, tigers, bears. It's only a pity the giant ground sloth had gone extinct by then. That could have been interesting. Those fuckers, those giant ground sloths, they had claws that were 9 inches long. Mm-hmm. Sane states like California have sane judges in them, like the federal court judge who denied the pleas of three gospel shops to keep holding in-person services because these gospel shops said, we're commanded by the Bible to lay hands on people and pray for them. It's commanded by Scripture. And the federal judge in question said, how nice for you. Shut the fuck up. Sit the fuck down. Stay in your lane. Pump your brakes. Go the fuck home. Try not to die. And also rejecting along the way the argument from Shield of Faith Family Church and Word of Life Ministries International and Church Unlimited that Governor Gavin Newsom's done violated our First Amendment rights. But no, the federal judge actually knows what the First Amendment is and says, and knows the law of the First Amendment, understands the Constitution, and not just the one that exists inside his own head that includes the phrase, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And he said, no, fuck off some more and keep fucking off. This led Harmeet Dillon, and he's on the Republican National Committee for California. He's also the CEO of Center for American Liberty. Sit, Liberty, sit! Woo! Said that we can count on more restrictions on all our civil rights with no end in sight. Jesus, I despise these freaks. but this runs along the same lines as the fraud merchant David Barton, the fake historian, who had so many lies inside one of his books that the actual Christian publisher refused to publish it. He's just a Republican turd wrapped up in a flag and a Bible. But he showed up on one of the tax-free Christian broadcasts to explain that you know whose fault it is that we shut down. You know whose fault it is that we shut down the country over this here plague? Non-believers. Yep. It's not the fault of the virus. It's the non-believers.
A fear of death. And we're seeing people go to excessive extremes because they are scared to death of dying, because this is all they know is what's here. They don't know of an afterlife. They don't even understand that there will be an afterlife, whether it's heaven, hell, or whatever they choose.
Or maybe, is it possible that David Barton, who spends his life lying, might be lying about the afterlife too? That there's no heaven, that there's no hell, that these are merely the ignorant imaginings of Bronze Age peoples who didn't even understand why it rained and would look at something like a wheelbarrow in slack-jawed amazement trying to figure out how the fuck that thing worked. That's possible, too. But no, it's fear of death. Fear of death and not understanding that there's an afterlife. You toxic, ignorant, malevolent, malignant dick.
You dick!
Precisely.
It's their choice through Christ. So that's one thing that stands out to me is the whole culture was built around understanding that you are going to go into eternity. Are you ready to go into eternity? And so the response is quite different public policy wise.
Meanwhile, this guy is in a room. It's a set. It's got all kinds of American flag porn and pictures of other of old old white men and old school desks and a big open maybe Bible or something. And I mean, it's an expensive set. There's a lot of tax-free dollars went into building that set. He's not broadcasting from some group setting, because David Barton may say he doesn't fear death, but it kind of looks like he does. Because otherwise, he could be broadcasting from a group of fellow believers. Maybe he could be broadcasting live from down in Baton Rouge. Maybe if he'd let him in on some of the sweet, sweet money that comes in off that hustle, maybe Rodney Howard Brown would let him broadcast from a bunch of the ignorati there in his Tampa church. But David Barton isn't going to do that.
If you're surrounded with leaders who understand a biblical worldview, what you do is call for days of prayer and fasting. If we can get a hold of God on this and get God to intervene, then we can see an end to this. And so while we did everything we could medically, Dr. Benjamin Rush is a great example of an early doctor who did so much with the yellow fever epidemic. We did.
Yeah, Dr. Benjamin Rush, who was the physician to the Corps of Discovery when Lewis and Clark took off on their wanderings. And he did so much with the yellow fever epidemic. And which, by the way, whatever he did with the yellow fever epidemic didn't much work. But he was a big fancier of Jeebus. But when Lewis and Clark took off, he sent them. He made sure that they went traveling and had some mercury pills to take in case they got to feeling the grip or the ague. Or maybe the phantods or the vapors. Mercury. Yep. Mercury. That shit persisted. That mercury theory was kind of like the hydroxychloroquine of the 18th and 19th centuries. Abraham Lincoln famously took something called blue mass, which again was comprised of mercury, and he took it for stomach problems. And yet, somehow or another, the stomach problems didn't go away. The stomach problems got worse. All in all, we have respect for Abraham Lincoln, but even before the night that the trip to the theater went sideways, he led a sorry, shitty life. Some of it may have been congenital. He may have had some sort of birth defect that made him so tall and lanky and skinny, gaunt and haggard. Or maybe that had to do with the fact that he couldn't keep any food down because he kept taking the blue mass mercury pills. Benjamin Rush. But he'll be fine, you see, David Barton will. Because David Barton is a very, very, very wealthy man. And one of the things that plagues have taught us down through the recorded history is that in many cases during plagues, the wealthy come out of it better than the poor do. Among other things, was it Boccaccio who wrote the Decameron? And that was sort of an Italian Renaissance version of the Canterbury Tales. And the Decameron is the story of 10 wealthy people who go and hole up in the countryside while a plague ravages the Italian cities, and to pass the time, they tell stories to each other. Sort of like Zoom without computers. And you can find it all over the internet. Won't cost you a penny if you want to read it. But the upshot is that the wealthy managed to dodge the plague a lot more often than did the poor, who were, stacked into tenements and ghettos, generally shitty living conditions, like so many salt cod in a barrel. But no. If only we had been more certain of the fact that we's all either going to heaven or hell, maybe more people would be with Jesus right now. Just warms the cockles of your heart, wherever, in between the left and right atrium and the left and right ventricle of the heart. One's cockles are. Yeah, I agree. Clarence in South Carolina stands says, Bob, where's the scientific proof of the afterlife? David Barton's full of it. I think maybe Clarence, for the sake of family radio, which this ain't, had left the S and the H off of in front of IT. David Barton is full of shit. There is no proof of the afterlife. Even that poor little boy who scored bajillions of dollars on a book about how he died and had a visit with Jeebus, turned out he later said that he was manipulated by his father into telling those lies and that he'd never seen anything while he was busy being dead and whatnot. Yeah. There's no proof. In fact, the positive proof is that when we're dead, we're dead. Now, here's the thing about being dead. Maybe it's a comfort. When you're dead, you don't know you're dead. Because you don't know. Because you aren't you anymore. Because the whole universe has ended for you. Scott in San Diego, subject line, "Oy vey, it's the Jews, Henry," he said in his best Nixon voice. P.S. Save Soviet Jewry, win valuable prizes. In the early 70s, I actually saw this spray painted on a sign outside a synagogue in the D.C. area. And there's, you know, there's all kinds of counters to various sayings and slogans. One of my favorite was where the Christian wrote somewhere, "Jesus saves," and somebody else along came along and wrote underneath it, "But Moses invests." Jack in Shreveport says, "Ah, yes, I was waiting for a mention of Louisiana in your list." And was that Bishop Tony Spellcaster you mentioned, or did I mishear? Pastor, he's not a bishop. Pastor Tony Spellcaster. He is sadly still among the quick. Oh, somebody appreciated the Fellowship Hall to-go menu this evening. The little old blue-haired ladies did it again. Thanks be to common sense. The blessed Mississippi mud cake. Hallelujah. Bob, the little old lady's got a big hallelujah out of me in the blind here with the mere mention of Mississippi mud cake. My mother is a former little old blue-haired lady herself. Used to make this for me when I was a boy. Brings back a lot of happy memories. Please pass my thanks and to the little old ladies in the blue-haired ladies in the Fellowship Hall kitchen. Stay safe, everyone. Signed, your buddy Dave in the blind. Who doesn't love Mississippi? Back in the days when I would go to the Fellowship Hall of the Baptist Church, they published the menu, and any time that Mississippi mud cake was the dessert, Wednesday night fellowship services, attendance would double. It really, really would. Well, I hope I didn't do too much damage to your salad there, your late brunch salad in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone, Billable Rick. The reason we are shut up, says Steve in New York, you mean the gays aren't to blame this time? Oh, you're to blame. Yeah, you're definitely to blame. You're always to blame. Because David Barton said that public policy failures by people who don't believe in heaven or hell. Well, that probably includes some gays. So don't think you're getting out of it that easy. Just quit it. Lady B says, mortality must be heavy on your mind today. Well, it kind of has been since this whole thing started, since I first heard of it. Plagues. Serious business plagues. Lady B says, and why do all the gospel sharps have southern accents? Stereotypical or typical? Yeah, I'd say probably typical. What's interesting, though, is the ones who wind up getting really big sometimes, they get a speech class now and then, and they speak this sort of posh, clipped southern accent where they don't sound quite so southern, but it's just there in the background. Ah, yes, thank you for the confirmation. Flavio says, yes, Giovanni Boccaccio wrote the Decameron. And the Canterbury Tales were patterned after Il Decamerone. One of the reasons for the belief that Chaucer came in contact with Petrarch or Boccaccio is because of Chaucer's many trips to mainland Europe from England. Chaucer happened to be in the same areas at the same time as Petrarch and Boccaccio. Another reason is the influence of Petrarch's and Boccaccio's works on Chaucer's later literary works, because, among other things, Chaucer wasn't just some starving artist. Chaucer also served as an agent a diplomatic agent of the British Crown. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, he was actually present in the ranks at Poitiers, I think. Subject line, scared to death of dying, Lee in New York says, words, so hard for people reading from an old book to understand words. If you're scared to death of dying, doesn't that mean you're dying and going into eternity? It kind of does. It kind of does. There's so many things to be mindful of, so many things to worry about. As Lady B alluded. And Ron's worrying too up in the far frosty, if not frozen, north, where it only snowed twice there last week. Ron says, I do have one little nagging question. I really hope this plague is not an attempt by the socialists to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids. Well, all socialist plots are designed to sap and impurify our precious bodily fluids, Ron. I would have thought a man of your wisdom would have sorted that out by now. It's all about the precious bodily fluids. There in Spain, our buddy Jim says, we will all be issued a certification of vaccination ID card very soon. The card will be mandatory for employment and travel, such as boarding an airliner. Welcome to the brave new world. You know, we have a pal named Jim in Spain. I'm guessing maybe that's not really him. Because the fact of the matter is, we have this little turd who uses specious email addresses. And I'm guessing that wasn't what he must have hit on one. But Jim in Spain, I presume that's not you. And I hope you're okay. I just hope you're okay. What else on this prayer meeting Wednesday? Oh, goodness me. I mentioned the article that talked about all about the horrible toll that is being taken in the African-American church by this plague, by willful people who insist on tweaking their Savior's little pink tomato nose. And I mentioned the one bishop in Virginia who said God is bigger than this virus and then found out the hard way that he isn't. Well, as noted in the story, the Rona has taken down 30 or more black preachers and faith community leaders. Somehow it has managed to miss one so far, though. That would, of course, be E.W. Jackson. He who so often rhapsodizes about hot, hard, sweaty men. And he's now decided that he knows what happened He knows what happened about the Rona, and he knows where it comes from, and he knows who to blame, and you better by God have to blame it, because see, this guy wants, on the one hand, he wants a First Amendment right to believe anything he wants to believe, but on the other hand, he's got a suggestion for anybody who doesn't believe what he believes, and therefore doesn't have the same right to believe as he sees fit, as does E.W. Jackson. By the way, a note coming from Brother Deacon Asa to his fellow Canoodlian Ron in the far frosty north. No, Ron, this plague is a plot by Bill Gates to depopulate the planet. Wake up, sheeple! No, somehow or another, E.W. Jackson has managed not to get the Rona. More's the pity. No, I take that back. Not going to wish it on anybody. Wishing don't matter anyway. It's just good practice not to. Ask not for whom the bell tolls, etc., etc. But somehow or another, and I think it's because he's probably wrapped in a 4-inch thick suit of $100 bills. E.W. Jackson, well, he's got this all sorted out.
50% of the people who get it won't even know they have it. Their symptoms will be so mild. But they say, yeah, but they're carriers and they could go infect somebody else. Well, that's, again, why you quarantine the more vulnerable people, the people who are in what I call the danger or the death zone. 70 or over, 70, danger zone. 80, death zone.
Highway to the dying zone. Gotta put my sunglasses on. Highway to the dying zone.
And comorbidities or underlying medical conditions that could exacerbate the complications that the virus would create.
Who doesn't he know some big words, comorbidities?
Create. Those are the people that you really focus on protecting. And you give everybody else an opportunity to develop the antibodies, to just let their bodies do what our bodies are designed by Almighty God to do, which is...
Designed! Almighty God designed the goddamn coronavirus too there, E-Dub, you fucking idiot. But our bodies weren't designed to do it. And because this is a novel coronavirus as opposed to a poem coronavirus or a short story coronavirus or a vignette coronavirus, well, this novel coronavirus gets inside you and begins to write War and Peace inside your genetic code, against which you are helpless, especially if you do not read or speak Russian. Designed to do. We are learning some hard, hard lessons in this country. And some of those hard lessons have to do with the fact that if we had 12% of the population, and 12% of the population was just dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass, they would be enough to keep a plague going. How bad is it? There are mayors in South Carolina, Stan, who are advising the citizens of their towns and cities, don't y'all be going to Georgia. Just stay right here and be safe in South Carolina, because McGovernor is getting it right. But don't y'all be going to Georgia, Stan, because them people is sick. Them people has got the Rona all over the place. Yes, they do. Stay out of Georgia, because they're getting it wrong. They're getting more disease every day. It's going up, 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 and they're going to open up their strip joints. I don't care how pretty them girls are. You stay out of them Georgia strip joints, you hear? That's how bad it is. But old E-Dub, somehow or another, he's managed not to get the Rona, and he's asymptomatic. Well, death zone, dying zone. Here's the problem, though. He says you can be asymptomatic and not feel anything. Well, you can be asymptomatic and not feel anything until you start feeling something. Like a headache that just won't go the hell away, that's just with you day and night ceaselessly. Or that, you know, dry hack and cough, but it's not going to stop you. Just you don't feel very good. Or chills, or fevers and chills, or the loss of taste and smell. I've read some articles lately about what are being referred to as pandemic dreams. People are having them, and I've had one. I had one last night. It was scary, because I read all this stuff, and I keep up with all this stuff. And let's see, red-rimmed eyes, weird blue spots on your feet. Yeah. And my dream, one does not typically think about being able to smell or taste in one's sleep, but I had a dream where I had stopped being able to smell or taste. And I woke up in a sweat. Told Agnes about it. She said, oh, I've had those. Yeah, those are pandemic dreams, baby. Okay, that helps. Thank you. And so when I woke up, I ran out and got a cup of coffee real quick. Do I taste the coffee? Do I taste it? No, I taste the decaf. Is it the Rona? No, it's just the decaf. But E-Dub, you can trust E-Dub, because E-Dub is a doctor, not. E-Dub is a virologist, not. E-Dub is an epidemiologist, not. E-Dub is an immunologist, not. Hell, E-Dub's not even a chiropractor. He's just an ignorant gospel sharp. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
To resist illness, to resist disease. Instead, what they're saying, what some of these scientists are now saying is, having isolated everybody, we have set ourselves up for a second wave. Because we have not had an opportunity to develop the herd immunity necessary to resist this thing. And so now we're just stuck waiting for a vaccine. People tell me things can't get back to normal until we have a vaccine. But you know what? God built in a vaccine for us.
No, he didn't.
And we ought to be letting that take its work. But you know, folks, let me mention one other thing, and then we'll come right to your calls.
Yeah, let's not go to the calls, but let me mention one other thing. God did not build in a vaccine. A, because, well, God. Imaginary friend. I mean, you can take any... Because Zeus built in a vaccine. Or because Allah built in a vaccine. Or because Jehovah, Yahweh, built in a vaccine. Because Ahura Mazda built in a vaccine. Because Odin Allfather built in a vaccine. Because Jupiter Capitolinus built in a vaccine. Because Witzelo Pochtli built in a vaccine, because Shipe Totec built in a vaccine. Because My Little Pony built in a vaccine, because Papa Smurf built in a vaccine. What do all these things have in common? None of them are real. And the people who are really scared of dying are the people who believe that crap, who have hung their hopes on it for a lifetime that they've spent thinking, well, you know, it may be shitty here, but it'll be better in the next one. And the light goes on and they go, oh, shit, there's no next one. I've wasted my life believing in the tooth fairy.
And this is a little bit of a tough one. But, you know, Bill Gates is running around saying that, you know,
Bill Gates, Corona Bingo, it's Corona Bingo, Bill Gates.
China is a distraction, and it doesn't help, because China's done a lot of things right. And you know what I say to that, folks? Let me be succinct and to the point. Anybody,
never in a million
after
years,
seeing the carnage this thing has wrought on our country and on the world, anybody who leaps to the defense of communist China should be investigated and perhaps charged and tried for treason.
Now, this is the point of the point in the program where I note that, well, E.W. Jackson is pro-life. Yes, he loves the precious little fetuses as long as they're in the womb. Treason comes with the death penalty. So he's only kind of pro-life, E-Dub is.
Now, I know they sound harsh, folks, but I'm serious. I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? This is a totalitarian regime that regularly, they just arrested four people from the Huawei company because they were publishing information about China's relationship with Iran. And as a result, the government of China arrested them. They are now nowhere to be found. And you mean to tell me, as an American, you're going to stand up and justify them and say, well, they've done a lot of things right. Like what? Poison the whole world?
Listen, shit for brains. Here's the thing. The reason we say that there is no point in hooting and hollering about China is because it's here. The time to have hooted and hollered about China would have been back, when the National Center for Medical Intelligence, or whatever it's called, was warning the Pentagon and the Trump regime about all this. Long about, November the 17th, 2019. Wasn't here yet. Could have done something about it. But they ignored it. Well, not entirely. The intel community did warn Israel. These are facts. This isn't conspiracy theory. This isn't Alex Jones. Back then, it mattered that it was in China. Back then, it would have been handy to say, still have a liaison at the Chinese CDC, but she'd been fired a couple of months before by Trump. He'd also shut down the National Security Council's pandemic response team. It would have mattered to have done something about China, and maybe we could have hollered, commie, and it would have made people feel better. Dill Harris, dude, Jesus, there is a virus running around communist China. We got to keep the communist virus from getting here. Did we do that? No. Not just no. Fuck no. Because this regime is a gang of incompetent racists, thugs, xenophobes,
bigots, foot pads, highwaymen, cut purses, toadies, and lick spittles. Two also idiots. There was a time to have a conversation about China and about the virus in China. It's no longer that time. Because now, here, on the 29th day of April, 2020, in a nation that comprises every bit of 4% of the population of planet Earth, we're approaching having, if we haven't already gotten there, half of the coronavirus cases on planet Earth. And it's not because we're counting them better. It is because a gang of sea above did not take their duties to this nation and to the Constitution seriously. But that's okay. We got a gospel sharp here whose knowledge of science you could pour in a thimble and not have it wet enough to drown a piss ant. And people are listening and paying attention to him. Damnation.
This is a brutal, dictatorial, evil, communist regime. And anybody who stands up and defends them, as far as I'm concerned, should get investigated for potential treason, because to me, that may be an indication that they've been bought lock, stock, and barrel by the communist Chinese regime.
You mean like precious I-wank-a-ma-daddy Trump Kushner's payoff with all of those Chinese patents, her interest in a casket-making company in China? You mean like that? You mean like all the debt, the millions and millions of dollars, the tens of millions of dollars in debt that Donald Trump has to that brutal communist dictatorship regime that old E.W. Jackson here is so wrought about? No, not that. No, he's just talking about anybody that says something that doesn't say all Chinese people are a yellow peril. Anybody that doesn't say Chinese people are a yellow peril, well, they should be investigated for treason. That's what old E.W. Jackson says, because God is love, y'all.
And you know what this reminds me of, folks? This reminds me of Jane Fonda. It really does.
We are and Methodists. Yes, Lady B. Yes, and Methodists. We're playing white wing bingo tonight. We got Bill Gates. If you had Jane Fonda on your white wing bingo card tonight, I'm surprised you're not yelling it by now, given what we've had so far.
That's what it conjured up in my mind. Jane Fonda, opposed to the Vietnam War, fine. You're an American citizen. You have a right to be opposed to a war. You got a right to say you don't agree with it. That's okay.
Well, isn't that just mighty decent of old E-Dub?
Fine. I don't agree with you, Jane, but I celebrate your right to disagree. But you...
And yet, here's the interesting part. I doubt E-Dub ever heard a shot fired in anger in Vietnam, or anywhere else for that matter. And not to put too fine a point on it, but Jane Fonda was right about Vietnam, while on the other hand, E.W. Jackson probably still hangs on to that idea of, we could have won in Vietnam if it hadn't have been for the politicians. We just didn't fight the war hard enough. You know, tell that to all those names on that black granite wall in Washington, D.C., E-Dub, you know, the ones whose numbers have now been eclipsed by the number of people killed by this virus that your god emperor let run wild all over our country, you fucking asshole. Damn the stupidity. I mentioned that 12 or 18% earlier because 12 or 18% is about the number of people that think, well, we need to open the country right now. even a large majority of Republicans say, nope, it's not time to go out and start LARPing and smollicking yet. From Jeremy in Vermont. Bob, stop telling shit for brains to listen. Obviously, they can't listen with a pile of shit in their brains. Yeah. Steve in New York noticed it, too. E-dub. Wait a sec. Trump sided with the Chinese and said he trusted the Chinese leader. Yeah, it's that magic selective memory of White Wing Radio. That didn't happen in the real world that he, you know, lives in. All right, there we go. Lee in New York adding to the list. Because the flying spaghetti monster built in a vaccine. It's the secret sauce. Lee says, my guess is marinara. No, Lee. See, that's why you're a mere acolyte in the church of the flying spaghetti monster. I'm a full pirate deacon, and I can tell you that it is definitely arrabbiata. Dave writing from the blind says, I nominate you for a cowbell for the My Little Pony Award. Who knew this is a group of sparkle fart ponies also worked on vaccines? Thank you, Reverend Bob. Well, thank you, Parishioner Dave, there in the blind. On another note, Steve in New York notes, relative to E-Dub, I'm all for charging Trump with treason, absent the death penalty thing. Steve remains true to his morals. Huh. Here we are, and like I said, we got 240 to go. No, I miscalculated. 205. 205 to finish April and be fundraising free tomorrow. That would be lovely. And let's run over and check in with our buddy Charlie in Tennistan. Hey, Charlie. Charlie, I got you, buddy. Are you there? Okay, technical difficulties. Are you there, Charlie? Charlie, that was an interesting noise. Hey, you there, Charlie? Charlie? Okay, so we know Charlie's kind of there. Well, it seems like Charlie's having some technical troubles of his own. You there, Charlie? Okay, maybe we'll hear back from Charlie. Let's try this again. How about now, Charlie?
Hello?
Yeah, Charlie, there you are, finally. I gotcha. Go ahead.
Charlie.
Hello?
Yeah, Charlie, go, man. You're there. I hope Charlie can get back. Been a while since we heard from him. Yeah, I got frontiered there. Thanks for letting me know, Eileen. Oh, dear. Eileen notes, a Newsmeister was interviewing some young ladies in Georgia as to their concerns about returning to their waitress jobs. Oh, no, we have a higher power watching over us. Grins, clapping, and dancing in place followed. Scary. They're a terrifying lot. And they are. Look, I mean, I don't like saying things like this, but, well, this disease is being spread by religious people because they don't live in reality world. Other people are spreading it too, but they're not actively trying to. The churches are actively trying to. Yeah, for Pete's sakes. I guess we're going to have tech issues this evening. What fun. All right. Hey, Charlie.
Hello.
Hey, how are you, Charlie?
Bob?
Yeah, I got you, man. I got you. Are you having audio problems tonight? Let me do something real quick here. I'm going to do a test call. See if we're having trouble. We had some troubles with Skype earlier this evening. Tracy knows where I was going to say when I... Damn, Bob, you can't say that's mighty white of you regarding my homie E-Dub. What about Ginger, please? Yeah, I know. I caught myself on the fly. Let's see. Going to do a test call with Agnes and see if there's a problem with the audio. There's the boss. Hey, boss.
Hey.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Do you hear me?
No.
No?
No.
You don't?
I can hear you through the wall, but you're not coming through.
God. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
You know, that's not really terribly helpful when you say, can you hear me? And the other person says, no, because then it's like, well, they're maybe pulling your leg or something. I didn't necessarily know she was just on the other side of the wall, the Viking warrior princess. All right, so into... Da-da-da-da-da. Ah! Found it. Try me again, dear. Don't you love? You know, professional broadcast operations have people to do this.
This is very professional, and I can hear you now.
No, it's not. Because professional operations don't have cords on the ground that you can kind of kick loose when you get, you know, get a little wrought.
Be thankful you have a cord on the ground to kick loose.
You are the light. You are the light of my life. You are the wind beneath my wings. You are the source of my boundless optimism, my Viking warrior pharaoh princess.
Right. Okay. I love you. Go for it.
I love you more. Bye. The lovely Agnes. Okay, so Charlie, we've got it sorted out this time. If you want to ring back in. Yes, she is. Subject line, dude. Lady B says, Agnes is awesome. You have no idea the quantum of awesomeness she possesses, Lady B. It is an awesomeness encompassed by the fact that, you know, day after tomorrow will be 27 years she's been awesome with me. Steve in New York caught the exchange. Can you hear me? No. Reminds me of a scene on MASH. Klinger. Knock three times if you're alive. Knock twice if you're dead. Colonel Blake knocks twice. Klinger. Oh, no. He's dead. Which was a take on the old Three Stooges routine. Listen, meet me there. If I get there first, I'll make a mark. If you get there first, you rub it out. Hey, yeah, yeah. Well, I hope Charlie will get back in touch. Oh, thanks, Steve from Georgia Stan. Get a room, you two, damn it. All right, now that we've got the lines unkicked, let's check in with Charlie in Tennistan. All right, it's finally all working, Charlie. How are you?
Not too good, Bob.
I know. I got your note. I didn't tell anybody because I figured that was your business and that was for you to tell.
What's that?
What you told me, you're not too good.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I don't care if you tell anybody. They gave me 3 to 6 months to live, and basically, there's a lot of that first three months gone, and they can't do anything. The doctor said that the treatment would be worse than the disease itself. So
sounds like your doctor's Donald Trump.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, he works for the Tennessee Cancer Center. And
no, you know what I was referring to when Trump said, you know, we can't let the disease be the cure be worse than the disease.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and tell people. If you want to, Charlie, tell people about it.
Well, I've got incurable pancreatic cancer and cirrhosis of the liver, and I'm just gradually fading out.
How long have you known?
They did a biopsy on me about a week and a half ago.
Were you working along for a while? I mean,
yeah, the pain just got so bad I had to go into the hospital and, you know, they thought, well, you know, don't go to the C word yet. It may not be that. And sure enough, it was. and it's progressed quite a bit. They said that it has metastasized into my liver and kidneys.
So, I mean, I don't. How are you? How are you maintaining?
I'm laying in a hospital bed right now.
Where are you? Where are you, Charlie?
Hamblin County Memorial in Morristown, Tennessee.
I know exactly where you are. Well, there's a lot of hearts breaking all over the Horn community for you right now, Charlie. Are you there in the hospital for the duration, or is there any possibility of getting out and doing hospice at home or anything? Or
hello?
Yeah.
I had another call come in. It overrode you. What were you saying?
I said, are you there for the duration, or is there any hope of you getting out and going home for hospice or anything?
Well, my long-term care insurance is kind of iffy, and I do have long-term care, but it only pays like $80 a day or something. So I don't know what's going to happen to me. I guess I'll find a manhole cover to stuff me under and put the cover back on and say.
Because America, right?
Yep. America and Donald Trump.
That just makes me, that makes me so furious for you.
Well, I mean, I've got quite a bit in the bank in my retirement if I can get it out. But, I mean, that's the way that America is heading. I don't foresee any change. Everybody is out to get what they can get. And to heck with everybody else.
Well, they're where, I know, like I said, I know exactly where you are. You're in Trump country.
Oh, yeah.
Are you surrounded by the faithful, Charlie?
Yeah. What do you mean by the faithful? I'm sorry.
Oh, you know, the true believers in Trump.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I cannot see. I had nothing to do with this coming on me. I've paid taxes all my life. And I want to tell you all your listeners out there. There ain't no here's from the government. I'm from the government. I'm here to help. It's kind of like I'm from the governor and we need to get more tax revenue out of you because you're not going to be around as long as other people.
God. Yeah, it's like a variation on that old saying. It's not, you know, you remember when Reagan said, the nine most dangerous words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." Well, now all pretext is gone, Charlie. It's, "I'm from the government and I'm here to screw you."
Yep.
At least this particular version.
And I don't know what's going to happen with all these places shut down and this coronavirus.
Are they worried about it there in the hospital where you are? Have you asked them?
No, they've only had one case in this hospital
that they know of.
I could not fathom a government that is that just turns its back on people. The only thing that could turn this around is if Donald Trump were to come up with something terminal and him have to face the health care system that he has put together. Because there's nobody out there to help. And if you don't have the money, you're just out of luck.
It's the greatest health care system in the world, if you can afford it.
Yeah, I think Mitch McConnell said that one time.
Wouldn't surprise me if he did, Charlie.
So, I'm sorry?
No, I just said Jesus.
So I'll probably be in quite a bit of pain the next few months. And I own two grave plots in Kingsport, and I'm going to be cremated. So that's no big deal. I mean, my funeral's paid for.
Anything you don't have to worry about right now is a little mercy. And I'm glad you don't have to worry about that.
And, you know, you look at people in this country, many of them have fought for this country. Many of them have given up a lot for this country, and these Trump supporters are just pushing them aside, and I don't understand it. It just really doesn't make any sense.
How old are you, Charlie?
65.
What a slap in the face. You qualify for Medicare, and then this.
Yeah, I'm on Medicare, but I don't know. Some of these drugs, there's an enzyme that after your pancreas shuts down, it replaces the enzyme that's not there, and it is terribly expensive.
Amylase, terribly. Yeah, amylase, lipase, there's several enzymes, and
yeah, and I don't think people understand, you know, what's going on. And, you know, I pay taxes to this government, and I don't pay taxes to give to foreigners. I pay taxes to help Americans. And you may disagree with that, but that's just the way I look at it. You help your own first, and then anything left over, you help others.
Yeah, the problem is there's not much interest in helping our own first in the first place.
I know it. I'm here to testify to that.
I mean, we couldn't even get the government to just say, hey, I mean, look, Canada, and I know it doesn't matter a hill of beans in the grand scope of what you're going through, Charlie. But Canada says, hey, everybody that's out of work, we're going to give you $2,000 a month till we get over this plague. So you don't got to worry. In this country, people are sweating, people are sweating their brains out for one $1,200 check.
I've never seen one. One has not hit my mailbox yet.
Well, there are some people that are just now getting it.
Mm-hmm.
God, Charlie. So are they managing your pain?
Yeah, they gave me some, I think what it amounted to was morphine. I can't remember what the brand name of the medicine was now. But I am in terrible pain. I mean, my whole abdomen is, they pulled a lot of fluid off my abdomen this morning, and it just comes back.
because you can't clear it.
Yep.
Well, I have been down the pancreas troubles road, as you well know. And what and I know our dear friend Steve from Georgia, Stan, down in the chat room, he recently went through it. And it is a hellish level of pain. And yours is probably 1,000 times worse. And so I hope they'll do everything in their power to allow you to be pain free and head toward where you're going with your mind about you and focused on what matters to you and not worrying and sweating and God that you can be at some semblance of peace as you deal with this, Charlie.
Yeah, I appreciate that, but you know, it's just I don't know. It's just a slap in the face to have somebody come and tell you, well, we can't do anything about it. And part of my problems is I had a blood clot in my leg that I did not know about. And it rerouted all the blood vessels around my pancreas and liver. So they can't go in and just chop off the mass that's on my pancreas. They said that if they tried that, I wouldn't make it off the operating table.
Makes me wonder how it is that Ruth Bader Ginsburg handled pancreatitis, pancreatic cancer. Makes me wonder how she handled pancreatic cancer and beat it 3 times.
I don't know. She's lucky.
I think maybe there's some people in this country get better health care than other people in this country get.
That's true.
So have you done all your treating there in East Tennessee, or did you try to go to, like, Vandy or any of that stuff?
No, I was at work, and this has been two or three weeks ago, and the pain just got so bad, I couldn't take it, so I went to the hospital, and the doctor gave me some stuff to try to clear things up, and of course, that didn't work. And so he sent me to a gastroenterologist or whatever they call it. And he said that they stuck a camera down in me. And he said that I had a mass on my pancreas. And then whenever the biopsy came back a few days later, he told me I had cancer. And then I got transferred over to the Tennessee cancer specialist, and they say there's nothing they can do. They said whenever I had that blood clot in my leg and the body rerouted all the blood vessels around my liver and pancreas, that was pretty much... they can't do anything without me bleeding to death.
Jesus. Well, there's all kinds of people writing in and wishing well for you. Jeremy in Vermont says, fuck cancer. I've personally known 4 people who died of cancer in the last 5 years, and the 5th will be my father. He has the beginning of the same cancer Charlie has. They say they won't be able to cure it, and he'll probably die with it. And
that is, it's true.
And Lady B says, so sorry, Charlie. Blessings and comfort to you. And Scott in San Diego says, oh, man, I was thinking about Charlie just last week. I can't be sorrier to hear this awful news. Please, for whatever it's worth, let Charlie know I'm sending all the healing energy and positive thoughts I can manage.
Okay.
You matter. You matter in this community, Charlie. You've been part of it for a long time, and there's a lot of people think highly of you.
Lee in New York says, first and foremost, sending best wishes and comfortable days. It's horrible that the money Charlie has to be part of this, that the money has to be part of this conversation. Meaning, you know, what a brutal country we are for making it that way.
Yeah, that is true. And, you know, you've got Germany, you've got England, Canada, and they don't have the same problems we have because they don't have the for-profit medical organizations.
Well, what it boils down to, Charlie, is they don't have the problems that we do because they don't want to have the problems we do. We have the miserable, screwed-up healthcare system that we do because we choose to have it. And that's a fact. This isn't some accident. It is by design. And it comes at a terrible price, my friend, a terrible price.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I got no room to... You ought to be saying that, not me.
But that's the way it's going to remain, and I can't understand why.
Well, again, because that is how the money wants it to be. That's how the hedge fund managers want it to be. That's how the healthcare CEOs want it to be. That's how the Republicans want it to be. That's how the pharmaceutical CEOs want it to be. And they've convinced a lot of people who don't know better that that's the way that it should be. Because Charlie, until they get into the place where you are, they sit around and say things like, I don't want to be no socialist.
Well, this country has had socialism in it for I don't know how long. People really don't know what socialism is. When you go down and you get a driver's license for a car, that's socialism. You know, it's already here, and there's nothing in the Constitution that, you know, everybody keeps saying that the Constitution prohibits it, but there's nothing in the Constitution that prohibits it. We're a representative republic. We're not a democracy. And as soon as people wake up and see that, the better off we'll be.
That's going to require a lot of learning, Charlie. Especially now. A lot. And it's learning a lot of people don't want to do because folks are happy in their ignorance. Bill in PA says, tell Charlie I hope he's able to deal with the pain as well as he can, and I wish him well. And Shorty sending best wishes to you from L.A.
I appreciate that. You know, I don't know. I probably, let's see. I might make it to Labor Day. I don't know.
It sure would be mighty fine if you could hang on long enough to vote against that dumb bastard in November. You know that?
Yep.
I know you'd enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. And I don't know. I reckon people are doing the best they can, but, you know, it's, I guess, in certain instances, that's not good enough.
Well, that's a generous spirit on your part, Charlie. Some people are doing the best they can. Other people aren't. And you've got a far different view. You've got a different view. You've got a different vantage point than most of the people within the reach of our voice right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, what you see as priorities may not be what we see, and maybe we need to see through your eyes. And so as long as you're able to help us do that, it'll be a help to the community.
I don't know what people do if they're flat broke and something like this happens to them. I guess the hospitals just turn them away and they just find a place to die.
Well, yeah. It's kind of like, even in a state like California, where you got, you've got a responsible government, and you got the Medicaid expansion and stuff like that. Remember, the first victim of the coronavirus was found dead in her home on February 6th. Went home and died.
It's a shame. And we supposedly live in the greatest country on earth.
Yeah, that's an advertising slogan, not a reality, Charlie.
And, well, I guess I better get off here. I'm getting kind of weak again.
I understand, Charlie. Stay in touch to the best of your abilities. And make sure there's somebody who can get in touch if you're not able to, okay?
Okie doke. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. And thank you for sharing.
Uh-huh.
Talk to you soon. Be as best you can.
Okay.
Bye now. And that is our good friend Charlie in Tennistan. Charlie wrote and told me what was going on, and like I told him, he didn't tell me I could say anything, so I assumed that I should not, and that it was his news to break, and it was his story to tell. God damn. Darlene says, and I know Charlie is still listening. Darlene says, I'm struggling with your news, Charlie. For what it's worth, please don't give up. And above all else, do the best you can. Thank you, Darlene. I got a feeling Charlie, having dealt with the things he's dealt with all his life, I think Charlie probably doesn't have a nickel's worth of give up in him. Thank you, Darlene. Jeremy tells us from Vermont, my ex-girlfriend was one of the four who passed this past year. She died $150,000 in the hole after two rounds of chemotherapy and no health insurance. What a country. Flavio says, tell Charlie I send him good vibes. My heart goes out to him. Thank you, Flavio. We got a whole bunch of really, really good, decent human beings in this community. And y'all prove it day in and day out. Shorty with a message says, I have to tell you this, Charlie. A while back, I was given 13 months to live. Then the next time, they gave me 6 months to live. I came to the conclusion, Charlie, like they say, doctors practice medicine. They've never mastered it. I'm saying all this to say that was over 9 years ago. First time, my brain was supposed to explode. Second time, my kidneys and liver and lungs were affected. I don't know what happened, and I don't understand. Like you said just now, Charlie, it doesn't make any sense. One thing I did do was to contact the Gerson Center. They told me don't eat any beef, and I have not. Main point of me saying all this to you is that you just keep doing what you're doing and what your heart tells you. The hardest part is the pain. Pain is a horrible thing. I still get unbearable pain, and that sucks. I just keep talking to people, listening to music, and sharing all that I know. When I'm lucky, I chew out as many people as possible, you know, those who deserve it. Feel this with your whole being, Charlie. I love the you that is you, even though I never saw your face. Never give up. Never give in. Giving in, now that's permanent, says Shorty. And every now and then, says Shorty in L.A., just say, screw Trump. Just say screw Trump. I hope it'll make you smile. Scott says, it bears repeating, human suffering is neither noble nor inevitable. It exists just because we permit it to happen. Quite often, religious, political, and business forces encourage suffering as it serves to help further their ends, interests, and purposes. Like poverty, like homelessness, lack of health care is a choice that we make in this country. A choice. Oh, Charlie, says Dave, a member of the fraternity of Dave's. Now, I got to tell you, I really don't know how, after that conversation, I don't know how to go back into the remainder of the program. Brother Deacon Asa is a bit of a, he's not buying into some of the touchy-feely. I don't mean from y'all, I mean just generally. This is just how Brother Deacon Asa is. The arc of the universe doesn't bend toward justice, Brother Deacon Asa says. Horrible things happen to good people like Charlie and Kevin. And yet some people continue on oblivious and in charge of the fate of the world. I get that. I do. So I want to thank y'all for joining in on this, what will now be truncated prayer meeting Wednesday. And let me encourage you, Dr. Bill's been back all this week. Make sure that if you're not signed up to get Dr. Bill's podcast feed, you probably should. He started a conversation with Dr. Kevin Shanley a week ago today, and technical difficulties, you know, Frontier ran under the bed, you might recall. Technical difficulties made it impossible to complete that conversation. But we managed to finally get it in today, and it's a conversation concerning
the particular area of expertise Dr. Shanley possesses, and namely China. And I think you'll find it a fascinating conversation. So it's up over at whiterosesociety.org, and it's also available via Podbean, and it's available just about on every podcasting platform you could want. Well, I don't know if that's a true statement or not. I need to talk to Brother Deacon Asa about that. But it's definitely up at Podbean, and it's definitely up at whiterosesociety.org. The audio is a little sketchy, but it's I believe worth your time. So check it out. Well, thank you, Shorty. Shorty says, "Hey, you guys, Charlie's why I love this program, because it don't matter who or where you are. The Horn is conversation radio. Charlie and Bob, that was one of the top conversations ever on the show." Lord, I don't know. The subject matter sure wasn't. But thank you, Shorty. Steve in New York writes, as we're touching Charlie's news, I just don't feel worthy saying anything other than this. Charlie, please call in as much as you can in the future. I know I love to hear your voice because, as I've always thought, there's nothing better than a Southern liberal. Thank you, Steve. Stand by.
I can't hear you. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yep, caller ID came up. That's the real Bob Kincaid, y'all. That's what his caller ID says.
I was afraid I'd stepped on the wire again.
Dude, I wasn't going to let you go out like that. Okay.
Well, thank you.
I won't keep you long, but I just, you know, you bear a lot of burden. People like to confide in you, you know? You're like a therapist. You're like a free therapist. And you keep us, you know, you keep us sane. But I don't want you to bear any burden. I really don't. I mean, we've got enough as it is.
I think Charlie's got the market cornered on burdens right now.
You just hear from so many people. So many people confide in you. You know, that's what I'm saying. And so you can pretend like, oh, it's no big deal, but it can get to you sometimes, man. You know?
Yeah. I'm not pogo sticking up onto the cross by any stretch of the imagination.
Did I mention the word martyr, Mary?
No. But it is a testament to the lovely cohesiveness of this community. Because, well, I mean, it just Agnes and I sit there at the end of the day sometimes, and we just look at each other and it's like, wow, just wow.
Well, I'm glad she's there for you for that, though, man. That's important. I mean, you know, at least you guys have enough in common that you can relate to each other. She knows her husband being dragged back towards that damn board, like board that console, because she got to get that fixed. God, you got to be heard, and you want to be heard. Dude, I get it. I get it.
Oh, I had so much fun playing playing Two Can Play That Lyric game with you last night. That was a delight.
You know, I mean, everything. It just pops in my head. I mean, I can't think of anything right now, but you just never know. You're one of those people where you're just like, you're embarrassed because it's so random. You could talk about anything. You know, like the skit, What's Up With That?
Yeah.
On Saturday Night Live. That is my favorite skit, because that is exactly what he is doing. He hears a word and it triggers him, and then the drum beats start back there. You know, somebody's hitting the hi-hat, you know, and he starts singing every answer, you know, repeating the answers, and then it just builds from there. It's a great sketch.
Oh, by the way, we had another one of those music moments last night. It was past midnight when Ferg came in the bedroom, and it was like you remember when you solved the everyone's a winner problem with the no 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 no, that's all we had to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ferg walks in and says, "I'm miserable. I can't stand it." And I think I think these are maybe brain structure neuro juicy things that are just passed down, because it's in my family, and he said, all I can hear in my head is, "Cool, baby," and Agnes, and I'm going, "What the fuck?" Uh-huh. And Agnes goes, "Oh, talking heads burning down the house."
No. Oh man, I didn't make the connection. Oh my god.
And Ferg looked at us like a weight had been lifted off of his brain, and he said, "Oh, thank you, Mama, thank you."
See, I think that comes from having a daddy who's a disc jockey. Even after a while, the kids start picking up on that, you know? They're just like, they start thinking like you do, you know? And that's the song Dad used to play when we were in the car and we were going somewhere. What was that? My dad had a song like that. it was Used to Be My Girl by the OJs.
Oh, my.
And, oh, my God, he played that song to death. And we were disgusted. We, you know, kids, we were just like, we'd sit in the back seat going, "She used to be mildew." You know, I mean, we were making up lyrics. We were so pissed off, right? So now we're all in our 50s, right? Me and my twins are the youngest, you know, we're 50. We're all 50 and above. And we play the shit out of that song.
Agnes, I can't help it. Agnes has still not forgiven me for what I did to that lovely ballad by Sting, you know, Fields of Gold.
Oh my God, beautiful!
Because I can tell you exactly where it happened. We were on I-64 westbound in Kentucky, somewhere between Ashland and Lexington. The sun was low in the sky. We were in the Ford Windstar minivan before it blew up, because that's what they did. And we were playing music, and I turned to her and I sang to her, "Upon the fields of garlic." And she just looked at me, and the kids were asleep, and she said, "Fuck you, Bob." Yeah, I loved that song.
Upon the Fields of Garlic. Tim Summoner's Tales, right?
Yes.
That was the album?
I believe so,
God.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, my personal favorite's the one where he what is that song? See, we're doing it now. Where he sings about the Romans built this place.
Oh my gosh, I know that.
All this time, all this time. All this time. Yeah.
All this time. Dude. Right, favorite album by Sting. First cassette I bought by this guy, right? Well, the first time I was introduced to him was one of my brother-in-laws brought a Sony Walkman. He was stationed in the Navy, And him and my sister were out there. They were in San Francisco or San Diego or wherever that, that base is. And he bought a Sony Walkman home. I mean, we were poor. I'm not going to go through that whole history. We didn't have any money. Let's just say Sony Walkman was not going to walk into my life anytime soon. So, you know, he brings that, and his cassette was The Police, for, you know, Ghost in the Machine, I think, something like that. And I listened, that was the first time I heard Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic. Blew me away. I was hooked, right? Okay, so I'm grown up. Dream of the Blue Turtles comes out. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What an amazing album. My favorite song happened to be Fortress Around Your Heart. I never get sick of it. But there was another song on there, Children's Crusade.
Yes.
And, you know, Sting, what was he taught English, right? You know, yeah. So he's like, you know, he's into that whole literary mode like you are. You're listening to lyrics, you know, the children of England.
It was an anthem about the First World War.
Yeah, the First World War. What was that? Midnight in Soho, 1984. Fixing in doorways, opium slaves. Copies for young men. Death's bitter trade, all for our young lives, something like that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You don't have me singing the whole song. Beautiful. Not what happened to the kids, not what happened to the soldiers.
No, but just the
how he told the story.
Right, and the fact that, you know, that it's a song on an album that was published in 1985, 86. And
84, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it was. And here he is writing about something that happened literally 70 years before and making it current.
It was amazing. The tie-in was beautiful.
And there was another track on there called Russians and Americans. And it was Russians.
Yeah, Russians. And I hope the Russians love their children too.
And that was based on a theme by Prokofiev. And I was like,
"You're more literary than I am." Whoa. But
well, no, they just admitted it on the album that it was based on a theme from Prokofiev. So I got to go and listen to the Prokofiev, and son of a gun, it was.
Wow. Yeah, don't you just love it when those artists just like pop out of the woodwork with those little, you know, quirks and gifts?
Yeah, and I hate the. It makes me sound like I'm yelling at people to get off my lawn or screaming at clouds or something. But we seem to be suffering a dearth of that right now, unless you really bust your ass and go looking for it.
Yeah.
Because back then you couldn't turn the radio without hearing that, you know.
Set me free. Oh my God! You remember the video?
Yes.
Some of the dancers and singers were in black and white, and then oh my God. He used a lot of black artists with his work. A lot of them do. You know, every good British rocker has had black people in their lives or, you know, in their band, okay? You know, it just is. Well, he could be the drummer or the bass player. He's going to be there. But, Sting was wonderful when he did that. There was some stuff. I compare him to Paul Simon. I liked Paul Simon. I liked what was the album that's still crazy after all these years, you know? I liked stuff like that. When he did his stuff in Africa, I mean, You Can Call Me Al was cute. There was some things. But every time somebody has to go to that Africa moment, I'm kind of like,
a little suspicious.
Okay. You know.
Out of that niche, I do cut Johnny Clegg some slack. Because he at least.
I've heard the name.
White guy, but he at least grew up there. And there's one song that will just get all the, I mean, it's Saddam literate, and it's not just literate, it's anthropologically literate, sociologically literate, and it uses a term that we don't use over here, but they use over there all the time, scatterlings.
Okay.
And the song is, and you must listen to it, and then you must give me your thoughts, Scatterlings of Africa.
Okay. I will look that up now.
And the really, really old video that features him doing him, because he was just, that's the community he was raised in. It's the community he honors. Mm-hmm. It's the community that he, you know, and of him doing the African tribal dance you know, white guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's not supposed that should be enough to wreck the entire universe. But it's amazing.
I mean, so my voice can dig it down. Yeah, no, I mean, and it depends on the rhythm and what influenced them in their life and what was most important. What was most important? Was it music, dance, laughing, love, you know, or was it fighting and taking away shit? And, you know, I mean, it depends. Some people are just naturally moved.
Well, it's kind of like the difference between, you remember some while back, it was a cultural phenomenon, a book called Eat, Pray, Love.
Yeah, that.
Well,
I didn't see this, but I heard of that.
The gone but not forgotten Joe Bagent. And if you've never just sat down and read Joe Bagent's stuff, look him up online and I mean, what a spirit he had. And he spent a lot of time in, Colorado.
I mean, he
knew Dr. Thompson, among other things.
Wow. Okay. He went to Hunter's house, huh?
Yeah. hung out with Timothy Leary.
Dude, there's quite a few musicians and famous people tucked around here. I mean, gosh, Chicago wrote one of their albums at a place somewhere. I can't remember the town. A lot of bands, you know, because Aspen and Vail, they have a lot of homes up that way, but they'll also have them like, Grand Junction is stunning. It's beautiful. It's Arkansas Valley River runs right through that. It's gorgeous.
Well, so I'm sorry, I skipped around. That's okay. I want to loop back to that in a second, though, what you're talking about. Sure. But Joe Bagent has an essay, the title of which is a riff on Eat, Pray, Love.
Okay.
And of course he's writing about the hyper violent Scots Irish white folks of Appalachia, and the title of that one is Eat, Pray, Fuck, Fight. I was reminded of that when you said, you know, what are the priorities? You know, laughing, dancing, music, or fighting? And well, that's worth the read. But you mentioned Grand Junction. And there's a story out today, the Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton. Remember the guy who said that Granny and Grandpa just need to jump on their swords to save the economy? That guy?
That was kind of like our boy Doug Lamborn. No, Lamborn. Lamb. You remember Lamb?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
70s? Yeah. Anyway. No, but go ahead.
Well, okay. Maybe that was Lieutenant Governor of Texas said it, but Ken Paxton said something equally heinous. Well, it turned out that the responsible government of Colorado, and in particularly one of the cities there, said, you know, we know we got a lot of out-of-state folks own property around here, and it's nice places. But y'all need to not bring your diseased selves up here and help kill us.
Thank you. Some of us actually live here permanently.
Well, it was the thank you didn't last. Because some Texas billionaires went and cried to the Attorney General of Texas, and he got on the phone to Gunnison County, where they had banned diseased billionaires from entering during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But this one gazillionaire, Robert McCarter, went pissing and moaning and crying to Ken Paxton, because he couldn't go to his $4 million lakeside home in Gunnison County. And so Ken Paxton got on the blower and said, y'all need to let my millionaire buddies in. And Gunnison County folded like a cheap suit. And then by way of excuse, a spokescreep for Ken Paxton said, it is a normal practice for the Attorney General to speak with multiple constituents from around Texas about issues pertinent to Texas residents. So I guess y'all got a new assistant attorney general in the form of the attorney general of Texas.
Well, you know what? It is, what do people say, it's shocking but not surprising. It's not even shocking. Oh, but I wanted to point out really quick, you went right into Southern accent mode.
I was down in Texas.
No, I'm not talking about earlier. That was beautiful. It was relatable. It was you. It was pure. But I'm talking about how when you talk about these guys who come up with these stupid ideas, you know, about what they want to do, for some reason the accents seem to be kind of Southern a lot.
Well, I mean,
am I messing up when I say that?
Behind the cornpone curtain is the laboratory of stupid ideas in America.
No, I just think it has to do with audacity. I mean, if a white Southern male can't get away with it, who the hell can?
You're absolutely true. No, yeah.
You were talking about Gunnison, you know, and those beautiful, God, that's farm country and stuff. Just beautiful. Colorado, it is gorgeous. It is, it's got a lot of little different political things going on there. But other than that, man, I really love my state.
See, I've only flown over. I've never set foot.
Did you see the mountains, though? Did you look down and say, wow?
Yes. There is something spectacular about looking down on the Rockies.
It's crazy. You know, first time I traveled out of state on an airplane, and was coming back, it was college, came back home, and I was like, that skyline, Jesus, that was the first time I looked at it and thought, wow, that is spectacular. If you come into the Springs Airport, you're going to see it, because we are right here. I'm standing right now probably about 8 miles away from the base. And you can hear me working, you guys. I'm sorry. All this water running and all of this. I am cleaning the building as we speak. And it's an empty building, because otherwise my dumb ass wouldn't be on the phone with Bob. But that's what I do. But, yeah, I was going to tell you real quick about that. You still there?
Right here.
Hello. Oh, I'm sorry. Across the street from this building that I'm in, there is a $1.8 million house. Actually, there is about three of them varying. They're about $1,800,000 to $100 million, $1.5, $1.8. Those houses were literally built in the 3 years that I've been cleaning this building. Those houses sprung up around that time. They're gorgeous houses. And I don't know if it's a white thing or what, but what is it about when you have a house like that, you don't want to buy a curtain so that everybody can look at your 90-inch television? I do not know, but you can see everything when you're living there.
Not even so much
anyway,
as a blind.
Just, hey, you know, maybe he covers his eyes when he takes his clothes off. I don't know. But
no, wait a minute. Wait.
I'm just saying. But what ties into the story you just told me is that the building that I work in, I go to another building, it's a few feet down. I talk about a water plant. It's a cute little thing. If you ever come to Springs, I'll see it. It's one of the oldest. It is the oldest. So it's a small building, but it's still important. Anyway, I have to come back to this building that I'm in to clock out. And all the lights had been out around the parking lot, everything. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And a guy who I became friends with, who's done so much for me, a remarkable young man. He's not a young man, he's 46, but he's just amazing. He's an amazing and decent human being. But anyway, we were talking, and he said, we have to kill the lights at night because, come on, finish the sentence for me, Bob.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Because it irritates the millionaires?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I'm thinking, dude, what if somebody pulls up in the parking lot and... You know, because, yes, paranoia is somewhere in my name. You know, so for a long time, I'm doing covert shit, man. I'm going between trees, looking around, you know, feeling for my, you know, fisting my keys and shit. And, you know, wishing I had bear repellent, you know, just to clock back in. Well, we finally did get the lights turned back on. I don't know what happened. Maybe somebody was jogging because we have a lot of kombucha drinking, you know, really skinny Lululemon, you know, joggers around here. So,
you know, that may be the first Lululemon reference on this program, and it's all yours.
I mean, these women, come on, man. This is like, you know, meme worthy how rich they are and how skinny and how healthy they are and how they run and their dogs. And I love the dogs. I love the dogs. The owners, you know, whatever. But I mean, I'm happy to please, you know. It's like, oh, I might be the first black person she's seen today. So, you know, it's got to be, you know, I got to be cool about it. I got to be nice. But anyway, that doesn't surprise me. If you're going to have a beautiful place like this and you're going to have million-dollar homes, you're really going to have to take a lot of shit. And no, it's not fair and it sucks, but it is what it is. But we're not the worst. We're not the worst. We are red. We do have crazy people here. But overall, I've got Medicaid. You know, I've got food stamps. Got a nice little increase the other day. You know, I get taken care of. And also the other advantage to being in this kind of state is I'm kind of spread out more. You know, I'm not living on top of anybody, you know. I'm not forced to take public transport. If you live in Colorado, you got to own your own car, you know. You there?
All along.
I'm so sorry, babe. You get so quiet sometimes.
No, it's a trick. I mute the mic so you don't get any of my, so there's none of my noise coming over you.
I'm sorry. And then you guys are just hearing me everything. I got the extender duster here. I'm dusting shelves in offices. This is a nice group of people. They are good people. And, you know, it's a pleasure. You ever read that comic strip, Fraz? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I want to say yes, but I can't call it immediately to mind.
He has a little black kid on there who makes the funniest lines. He draws a little black kid, but he's a janitor. He cleans an elementary school. But he's also a philosopher, and, you know, he's just really smart. And I kind of think of myself, you know, and you don't have to say really smart, but I kind of think of myself like that when I'm here, you know, the janitor, or, you know, people, oh, wow, you do know a little something. I was like, don't ever think that I didn't. You know, it is what it is. Bob, I've just been blabbing my mouth.
No. This is exquisite because, I mean, you say, yeah, we got some red. Well, there's nowhere that doesn't have some red. But the question is, have they managed to overwhelm governance? And you're in a place where they haven't.
They haven't, yeah.
And think, you know, and all you really have to worry about right now is getting the hell rid of Cory Gardner in November.
Yeah. I didn't even vote for him the first time. It ain't even going to happen. It's like, how am I going to work on voting somebody out of office when I never voted to put them in office, Bob? You know, but I mean, I vote, my God, you know, I'm sorry, that's my trash can. One more. I'm putting it in the elevator here. We both had elderly parents who were older than the average parent. My mother was 42 when she gave birth to me and my twin, and we were the last of her nine children. And, to them, the right to vote, man, you know, it would be as if I was spitting on my mom's ashes. It would be as if I was not honoring everything that my dad had worked so hard for his girl. Not to vote. I have always voted. I have voted since I was 18 years old. I vote in state elections, you know, city elections. You know, national elections, county elections, I just vote. So, you know, for me, you know, why wouldn't I want to make this world a better place? why wouldn't I want programs expanded, you know, for the kids in school, like all these kids that are at home right now, Bob, and some of them don't have fucking laptops, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I was reading an article somewhere where they were talking about African kids and the African men who put bandanas over their mouths and they go dig for precious metals. That's the same shit that goes into our cell phones and our laptops and our computers.
Yeah.
And then you get to America and you got black kids who can't afford it. So the cycle is complete. But with those kids being home from school, man, that, you know, that's not necessary. It is up to our government to make sure that its citizens are taken care of.
Right. That's what I meant when I was talking to Charlie, and I said these are choices. These aren't accidents. It didn't just happen that there are millions, tens of millions of people who don't have health insurance. That didn't just happen. That was a conscious, positive, determinative choice. And we can choose not to, too, once we get in place the people who will work the will of the people. I mean, remember, you've got a majority of Republicans, you know, just out there every day, you know, rolling along Republicans who say that they would like to have Medicare for all, a majority of Republican voters.
No, but when you hear that shit, though, Bob, when you hear that and you read statistics like that, you know what that's about? Those are the same motherfuckers. Excuse me, I have to badge into different areas. Those are the same people who will sit there and say, I don't approve of kids in cages, but still press the button for the motherfucker who put the kids in cages.
Right. And you know what? You know why that is? You know why that is?
Why?
It's that priorities thing we were talking about and that voting their interests thing we were talking about. Yeah. Here comes the Southern accent. Here, let me see if
That's
I can
okay,
do it. Let me see if I can do it network standard.
Okay.
Yes, I disapprove of children in cages. However, as long as the Democrats continue to murder children in wombs, I'm sorry, the children in cages will simply have to wait.
Oh, my God. And such as, and so forth.
And the Iraq.
Yes, of course, and the COVID, and the Rona. But, you're right, though. There are people who always vote against their best interest. Do you remember that interesting little Wikipedia link I sent you about where the term kite cut off the nose to spite the face?
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I haven't forgotten that because to me, I think it just embodies everything that is wrong with people who vote against their best interest for those nuns to purposely disfigure themselves and then die anyway because they were so ugly. The soldiers wanted to kill them or had to kill them, you know? And we're not going to figure it out. Sometimes I hear you and you are just on fire. You're so passionate. And then there's a part of me that's like, but Bob, honey, what difference does it make at this point? Why get worked up over people who don't want any better? And then I remember, because he's in the middle of this. He's surrounded by it, and he knows some of these people. And that is why he gets worked up about people who vote against their best interests. You know? And I don't know, compassion will make you cry a river every night. And after a while, you just start getting dehydrated, Bob.
Well, but sometimes the tears are replaced by just straight-up ferociousness. I mean, I wasn't going to shed any tears last night, but when I found out that there was a crazy ass maggot mayor who was posing a direct and proximate threat to the life of my daughter and her unborn child, no, there ain't no tears. That's straight up fury. I'm still so damn mad. I called the governor of New Mexico's office today and left a message. Not that it mattered or anything. But I identified myself. I gave him my phone number. And I said, my 23-year-old daughter lives in Grants. She's expecting a baby. And I would appreciate it if the governor of the state of New Mexico would use all the lawful powers afforded her under the Constitution of the state and the nation to go and get that menace to public health and public safety off the streets.
You feel better?
I did. And you know, just like that imaginary Kentucky Derby of the future that I was talking about on Monday, you know, mm-hmm. Donald Trump sucks cocks in hell, the horse that wins the future Kentucky Derby. I was a little gratified in my imagination of seeing maybe, you know, a New Mexico State Police Bradley fighting vehicle toddling down I-20 toward Grants with a warrant, because he says he wants a warrant, with a warrant for Mayor Modi Hicks. And it's, you know, your offer has been accepted. Step into the vehicle, Mayor. You are charged and you are served.
It doesn't mean we shouldn't try. It doesn't mean that at one point this will make a difference. But I don't know. I mean, you tell me, when is it a good time to just back off and say, you know what, fuck it? Or is it, you know, like finding out my sister was sneaking to the hair salon and you know, I'm dropping her off a mask. Every time I get two masks, I give her one. I'm, you know, I'm giving her rubber gloves from, you know, this place. I'm borrowing gloves so that she can have rubber gloves.
Did that get all over you? When you found out she was getting her hair did.
I was a little frantic. But, you know, and I mean, she knows her hairdresser. They've worked, you know, been together forever, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm too pushy again. You know, I'm that bitch. I'm a helper, Bob. I'm a writer with a nice voice, and I'm not using either skill. So I try to be a helper. I try to fix the things that I can. I had to come to grips with that shit the other night. I say the other night, maybe last week. I had to lay there in bed and tell myself, you are doing everything you possibly can. And I do everything. I'm doing everything I possibly can. But at some point, you have to tell yourself, man, I did everything I could. I did everything I could. You know?
Well, you know what? You used a perfect word, because you're in a pretty special category. Remember the fundamental advice of Mr. Rogers. When there's trouble or you're afraid, find the helpers.
And I think my sisters know that and appreciate that. She appreciates it, but there's just different priorities for her. You know, she is in the public eye. She drives a bus, people see her. You know, gotta represent. You know, I haven't taken care of myself like that in years, and I used to be hair, nails, and clothes. Honey, I was a credit card queen, because, you know, there was this image, and maybe Tracy and Shorty and all my other black lady listeners can identify with it, man. You have to represent. You might wear the same outfit as that white woman, but yours is going to be neater. It's going to be better pressed. The colors are going to pop. Your hair is going to look better. You have to look good. Because that gives you some respect. That gives you some chance. I used to be like that. You know, I used to iron my jeans when I was 8 years old. That was our culture. That's what we did. You know, but it was also, too, coming from those older parents, which I started that story that I didn't finish. Older parents who were voting, you know, thought the right to vote was important. Older parents who knew what was going to happen to you. if you did this. I remember, I'll tell you this real quick. I'm tying up your time. You have blue eyes?
Yes.
I used to work a job. The woman's name was Michelle. She had the prettiest blue eyes I'd ever seen. And she would look me dead in the eye every time she spoke to me. Dead in the eye. Almost up in my face, man. I'm telling you, I could tell she gargled that day. She was always just up in my face. So, you know, I started thinking that's how everybody, you know, talks to each other. And one day I was talking to my dad like that, and my dad said, "You stop that right now." And I'm like, "What's up?" He said, "Don't you look me in the eye like that. Don't you stare at me like that." And what he meant was he was so used to not looking people in the eye. And you'll see this with some black people.
No, that's the eyeball rule. I know all about it. I've been in seminars.
Yeah. So,
goes hand in hand with the step-off rule.
I can't remember the step-off rule.
Well, that's where when Ole Miss and Young Miss are coming down the sidewalk to you, towards you.
Oh, yes.
You
step off
into the muddy street.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't matter if you was wearing a white dress or not.
Right.
Clear the path. You know, and it's there. And I'm not going to, you know what? I don't want to dig it. I just let y'all know. There's a lot of pain behind those memories, man.
Oh, yeah.
You know? There's some pain. And it was what it was.
And
the thing
you understand it, Lady B, within the cultural context of being African American in the United States. But some of the things that you've just said are the same things that come out of poor Appalachian white America too. There is a kinship, and it's
I have to stop you because I want you to tell your story. You do all the time. But then that's the problem, too. If we're in the same goddamn boat, if we're getting treated the same way, if there's just as much disgust for our existence, you know, their existence as it is for ours, yeah, why? Why do you want to treat us like that?
Right, and why?
Why
is that wedge always sitting there for somebody to drive between us? Well, they've got that wedge because they've always had that wedge. Because that is the tool that has always worked.
Oh, yeah, you know. Yeah, it's the nigger's fault, you know. Use the N-word, sorry, y'all.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's their fault. Focus on them. I'm going to take all your shit. I'm going to get your land. I'm going to poison your water. But it's the Mexicans' fault.
Right.
Focus on them.
It is the 400-year-old practice of othering.
But you know what? I don't even want to blame the ones who buy into that shit. I mean, there's something deeper there. There's just like I'm a failure, man. I'm a fuck up. My life did not try at all like I thought it was. And I know it's wrong, but I gotta blame somebody. And this is okay. My friends around here blame hell. They got Confederate flags. My friends are doing it. So I need to, and these motherfuckers be listening to hard rap, you know?
It has to be this way, just by virtue of the population demographics of this country. There are more little privileged white boys walking around with their pants halfway down to their fucking knees than there are young black men doing the same thing by orders of magnitude.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see, you know, and when it gets to the point where I see it in Appalachia, well, fuck, it's gotten around because everything gets here last.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
but I,
believe you me,
same
I mean,
time,
you know, there is a difference. You know, I can look at a white boy and say, and because, you know, I'm old enough now, I can say, son, I can use that word now. Pull your goddamn pants up.
Yeah. And he blows you off like he would his grandpa.
Yeah. But somebody has at least said it to him. And that's what I mean when I'm constantly talking about cultures got to fix what's wrong in their own cultures.
Bill Cosby.
And that was the next name words out of my mouth. There's a right way and a wrong way to do it.
Yeah. Let me tell you a few things about Bill, how I feel about him, you know. You know how I frequent that aggregator site that, you know, we talk about.
Yeah.
And there'll be people on there that jump on there. And my God, they will spend 20, 30 minutes talking about Bill Cosby like he had a tail and what a fraud he was and what a dick and how that brother should just go ahead and rot in jail and get the COVID. And I'm like, and man, your world and my world. Dude, Bill was highly respected. And you're going to say, yeah, and that's what makes it so bad. But you don't get it, man. I was at an HBCU when Bill was doing his show. That was a big goddamn deal. Oh my God, a black doctor and lawyer? What the fuck, man? We knew they existed, but you know, like yeah. the lawyer my mom.
You sure this isn't a science fiction show? Yeah.
Oh shit, you still there?
Yeah, I said, you sure this ain't a science fiction
show? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was weird. It was just unsettling. I'm supposed to, I mean, that dude came and spoke at my college, man. It wasn't my graduation. It was the year before. Oh, my God. Blacks in their finest. Church services the night before. I mean, everybody was just, it was like the preacher was coming to town or, you know, it was just a big deal. I'm in Mississippi, okay? I'm in motherfucking Mississippi, okay? It was a big deal. Our campus was only about 10,000 kids, and we actually were a pretty big deal. I mean, the little gas stations, stores, restaurants, or whatever were counting on us to give them their income. When Bill came into town, baby, and then the news stations from Tupelo and Memphis drove, came down, and I was in the media program, so we were covering it anyway. It was amazing. When Jesse Jackson came to spoke to, I wasn't going to vote. I didn't. I like Jesse, but I he was like, you ain't got a chance. Like Eddie Murphy said, you know, you dodge a president, you know, no. But when he came to town and he bought the Reverend Joseph Lowry and he bought all of these civil rights people, Abernathy, all these dudes, I mean, man.
History alive before your very eyes.
It was life changing. He was a kid. Uptown Saturday night. Oh my God. You know, all the movies he did. Oh my God. Bill Cosby had the album. Dad is great. Give us a chocolate.
My children were raised on that bit. In fact, my lovely wife gave our grandchildren chocolate cake for breakfast just last week.
That is awesome. I told you. She's up there, man. That is a keeper. That is a keeper right there.
Meanwhile,
I'm saying this.
Meanwhile, Ferg, just as an aside, Ferg says, we were in the car and I said something to him. And he said, you know, I was listening to that just last night. And because he's a bit of a minor bird like me, he goes, and you'll catch the reference. He goes, hey, Rich, sorry about the monkey, man. Damn, yeah. I was going to eat him. Yeah, I'm a monkey. And does the whole Richard Pryor monkey bit.
Oh, yes. God. Richard, and then, of course, more age-appropriate for me, Eddie.
Yeah, see, that's the generational divide, Eddie, for you and me.
But Richard was in the household, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We had that N-word, it's crazy. We had that album.
Did you have Bicentennial N-word? Did you have Bicentennial N-word?
My brother did. Brother did, man. So, but I guess my point is, I remember when that shit about Bill came out and, you know, I was talking to my twin and I was like, man, now this is just white folks trying to bring a brother down. And she said, I was about to say my name. I won't say it yet.
Y'all ain't, we ain't that close.
Yeah, right.
She said, she said, Lady B, he drugged them. He drugged them. Dude. And I sat there and I reflected, you know. Here's the thing, and I might be wrong. I think they probably would have slept with him anyway. All he had to do was ask. Because he was famous.
Whoa.
Who goes to a famous guy's house to have dinner? But I'm picking on women. I'm shaming women. I'm a woman. Okay? Okay?
Okay, but time out. If that, I don't know that you are. If that's the dynamic, mm-hmm. that people have sex with famous people or ordinary people, mm-hmm. let's frame this. Ordinary people like to have sex with famous people. And we, and that way we can say, yeah. it without reference to gender whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, isn't that true of a certain segment of the population? Isn't there, yeah, is, yeah. Isn't there a colloquialism for wealthy political donors who will let badly needed sectors of the Democratic universe starve, but they'll pay $100,000 to get a picture standing next to a politician? And isn't the euphemism for that, Lady B, star fucking?
Yeah, and a lot of people do it.
So
here's
the
thing, though.
Yeah, I think you said something profound.
Should we shame them? No. No, use what you got to get what you want. We found that shit out here in April of 2020, didn't we? That, you know, by any means necessary, kind of like me getting my sister those gloves. Fuck that. You know, sometimes it comes down to what you need to do. But long story short about Bill, and fuck Bill Cosby, it was a little bit harder for us to accept him. That he was the monster that these women said he was. And I'm sure there may be white people who people got disappointed in, too. But this was a big goddamn deal.
Well, it was.
This was a big deal. You know, there's a thing, and I write to you about this, and I say this shit. People look at their leaders as mother and father figures. And one thing good white folks have had the advantage of is looking at a leader and seeing somebody who resembled them. So when you're black, you get what you can. Most of our heroes are entertainers or sports figures, man. We got a few legislative heroes here and there. But ask the average kid, you know, and they're not going to know. So it's getting better. Barack was... Fuck. Dude, come on. Do you have any idea? Do you have any idea? Yeah, you do, because it was that remarkable.
Well, and not just that. I have it. The idea I have is an idea that I gleaned on the D.C. Metro after the first inaugural festivities were concluded, and I was coming into D.C. to do a remote.
Uh-huh.
And I was riding the Metro packed shoulder to shoulder with families, with mamas and daddies holding little sleeping babies in their arms and their heads tucked against their shoulders, who had done whatever had to be done to get there so that they could say to those little babies who might not even remember, baby, you were there. And that's an actual conversation. And that's an actual conversation I had.
My sister Kat was 3 years old when John F. Kennedy came to Colorado Springs. You know, my parents brought her to see that parade. But your point, I mean, but the thing about Barack is that, yeah, my dad served 20 years in the United States Army, 63rd Engineering Corps. They built bridges and dodged mines. That's what he told me. My dad cried. My dad was a platoon sergeant, Mom.
Yeah.
Cried. He cried. You got to go.
and I do too.
Well, I got to share a message with you before we go. Far, far from the springs, in the lush and greening hills of Vermont, a message comes from Jeremy, who says, "Tell Lady B I said hi, and I know a little bit about dust in the office buildings, and I'm currently mopping a floor. Essential workers,
oh, man.
After all."
Yeah.
So that's Jeremy. Yeah. And
Jeremy.
You touch people, and
I say shit sometimes. You know I'm harsh, and I love it because then you'll pull back and you won't read it. But I'll be like, "Oh, I went too far." But I'm just telling you, man. I'm telling you. You know, it's different sometimes. It can be harder too, but.
And it's, you know, good. And yeah, that's the thing. We've got concentric descending circles of different that we're going to come out of whatever this is whenever we come out of it. And the different is still going to be there. The pebble has landed in the pond and the ripples have traveled outward, and it will be as if the pond has frozen. Because it's going to stay different for at least a while. And some of that may not be bad.
Huh?
Some of that may not be bad.
No. But I just don't want black men wearing masks to be cops get suspicious of them, you know, over bullshit. There's no accidents. There's never accidents when it comes to shit like that.
Nope. And I gotta give you one more word of praise because there are many of them this evening. Brother Deacon Asa says, "Lady B always brings a cheer to the table, and man, those pipes! I doubt that any other caller could have turned this ship around and lifted the mood this evening as well as Lady B just did. And because he knows the song, and you know the song, and I know the song."
Yeah.
Brother
Deacon
Asa says, "I wait all night for calls like these."
Oh, my God. Oh, thank you. Oh, my God. I love Steelers. You know, hey, yeah. That's me. Sorry. I'll let you go.
All right. You take care, Lady B. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. Thank you.
Love you guys. All right. Love you. Blessings, Charlie. Love you guys.
Take care. Bye now. The one and only Lady B. Nobody, accept no imitations. She's the real deal. And I feel extreme gratitude for her, to her, because it was a tough note. I just didn't know where to go after that hard and painful conversation with Charlie. And Charlie, you are so in our thoughts and remain in our thoughts. And in the thoughts of this community, you be as well as you can be, Charlie. And thanks to all of you. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program, however you so choose to do. Thank you to the little minority of listeners to this program who keep it afloat and keep it going. Thank you. Thank you, Steve from Georgia Stan and Ms. Karen, little Cletus and little Twiggy. They knocked the fundraising down a little further. So we're now at what, $200, and we'll use the last day of the month to do the last day of the month's funding. Thank you. Thank you for keeping this community going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. Stay home.
avoid maggots as though they were the plague, because they probably are. And Thorn in the Side Thursday tomorrow. Later.